Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of The Virgin and the Gypsy by D.H. Lawrence, narrated by Margaret Hilton. This book was copyrighted 1930, and this performance is copyrighted 1988 by Recorded Books, Incorporated. The Virgin and the Gypsy was only discovered after Lawrence's death in 1930. The work was not yet prepared for publication, and probably lacks the author's final revision, but was immediately printed exactly as it was in the manuscript. Perhaps written before Lady Chatterley's Lover, Lawrence's last novel, this shorter piece has a similar theme: the power of instinct and intuition in the struggle against the constraints of civilization and social convention. And now, The Virgin and the Gypsy.
1. When the vicar's wife went off with a young and penniless man, the scandal knew no bounds. Her two little girls were only 7 and 9 years old, respectively, and the vicar was such a good husband. True, his hair was grey, but his moustache was dark, he was handsome, and still full of furtive passion for his unrestrained and beautiful wife. Why did she go? Why did she burst away with such an éclat of revulsion, like a touch of madness? Nobody gave any answer. Only the pious said she was a bad woman, while some of the good women kept silent. They knew. The two little girls never knew. Wounded, they decided that it was because their mother found them negligible. The ill wind that blows nobody any good swept away the vicarage family on its blast. Then, lo and behold, the vicar, who was somewhat distinguished as an essayist and a controversialist, and whose case had aroused sympathy among the bookish men, received the living of Papplewick. The Lord had tempered the wind of misfortune with a rectorate in the North Country. The rectory was a rather ugly stone house down by the River Papple, before you come into the village. Further on, beyond where the road crosses the stream, were the big old stone cotton mills, once driven by water. The road curved uphill into the bleak stone streets of the village. The vicarage family received decided modification upon its transference into the rectory. The vicar, now the rector, fetched up his old mother and his sister and a brother from the city. The two little girls had a very different milieu from the old home. The rector was now 47 years old. He had displayed an intense and not very dignified grief after the flight of his wife. Sympathetic ladies had stayed him from suicide. His hair was almost white, and he had a wild-eyed, tragic look. You had only to look at him to know how dreadful it all was, and how he had been wronged. Yet somewhere there was a false note, and some of the ladies, who had sympathised most profoundly with the vicar, secretly rather disliked the rector. There was a certain furtive self-righteousness about him when all was said and done. The little girls, of course, in the vague way of children, accepted the family verdict. Granny, who was over 70 and whose sight was failing, became the central figure in the house. Aunt Sissy, who was over 40, pale, pious, and gnawed by an inward worm, kept house. Uncle Fred, a stingy and grey-faced man of 40, who just lived dingily for himself, went into town every day. And the rector, of course, was the most important person, after Granny. They called her the Mater. She was one of those physically vulgar, clever old bodies who had got her own way all her life by buttering the weaknesses of her menfolk. Very quickly she took her cue. The rector still loved his delinquent wife, and would love her till he died. Therefore, hush! The rector's feeling was sacred. In his heart was enshrined the pure girl he had wedded and worshipped. Out in the evil world, at the same time, there wandered a disreputable woman who had betrayed the rector and abandoned his little children. She was now yoked to a young and despicable man.